Manchester who joined a WhatsApp group where offensive messages were shared. BBC News.
With Lisa Costello. We have stand-up comedy from Alexei Sale next this evening on Radio 4. First, though, a word about new comedy starting next week. From Desert Island Discs, here's Lauren Laverne and her most recent castaway.
On BBC Radio 4.
Why on earth I'd kept this coffee machine with me, I couldn't say. Along with a Bible, the complete works of Shakespeare, one additional book and 8 final records of biographical significance.
Stephen Mangan is washed up on a very famous desert island.
I'd had a conversation with someone recently about this exact selection of items.
And with him is every single former castaway.
I was bunking with tennis mother Judy Murray and had impressed Lawrence Dallaglio with my early attempts at basket weaving.
The Island starts next Monday at 2:45 on Radio 4. And listen to the complete series now on BBC Sounds.
Zadie Smith and Andrew O'Hagan are among the lineup on Front Row at 7:15 in another special edition about how culture has changed in the first quarter of this century. Tonight's focus, literature. But now, another chance to hear stand-up and philosophy at Alexei Sale's Imaginary Sandwich Bar, first broadcast in 2022.
The Calvin and Hobbes cartoonist Bill Watterson once said, "Sometimes I think the surest sign that intelligent life exists elsewhere in the universe is that none of it has ever tried to contact us." As the world we humans have created gets more depressing, I try and take solace from nature. A lot of people sneer at pigeons, but if you study them, they are amazing creatures, each one with beautiful and distinctive plumage. There are 4 pigeons that roost on the parapet of my house, and I have named each of them after a troubled cop played by James Nesbitt in a different TV series. I say to them, "Hello, D.I. Danny Fraser from Channel 4 Suspect. Have you torn open my rubbish bags again?" Or, "Hello, Detective Superintendent Tom Brannock from BBC One's Bloodlands. Have you been crapping on the roof of my car again?" Or, "Hello, Undercover Detective Tommy Murphy from Irish Television's Murphy's Law. Have you been eating breadcrumbs scattered in the park by a mad woman?" Or, "Hello, burned out Police Detective DS Michael Broom from Sky TV's Stay Close. Have you, despite anti-pigeon propaganda, been performing a vital service to the built environment by eating masonry beetles that would otherwise consume the brickwork of our beautiful old building?" Now, while I can easily tell pigeons apart, I have great difficulty with people, even if I've met them several times. Unless somebody is a close friend, both me and my wife Linda often don't know who they are, even after multiple encounters. This particularly bothers Linda, who really wants to be the sort of person who is socially kind and who recognises and values everybody she meets. One evening we were both at a charity event and there was this couple next to us, and Linda thought to herself, "I am absolutely certain I've never come across this woman before." So my wife turns to her and with a big smile says, "Hello, I'm Linda. I don't think we've met." And the woman replied, "You had dinner at my house last Tuesday." There were these friends of my best mate, Harry, a couple who had a dog that they were crazy about. And we met them a few times, didn't particularly take to them, but then it was okay because they moved out to the suburbs and we didn't see them for the longest time. Though they would still send us Christmas cards signed, "Season's greetings from Dave, Claire and Amy." Trouble was, we couldn't remember out of Claire and Amy which one was the dog and which one was the wife. It didn't matter until one night we met Harry for a drink in a pub by the bus garage where he worked. And surprisingly, Dave was there looking very sad and distressed. He told us in a shaky voice that Claire had recently died. Apparently, she'd seen a squirrel across the street and racing over the road intent on chasing it up a tree. She had been hit by a truck and killed. Linda said to Dave, "Oh, I'm awfully sorry, but once the grief has died down, you should absolutely get another one from a shelter." Turns out Claire, Dave's wife, really hated squirrels. here we are at my imaginary sandwich bar. Behold my sandwich bar. Baps at bargain prices, where all you cheats and thieves and liars come for rolls and custard slices. Cause humanity is cant and vanity, but underneath it all, a man's a man which does enjoy his daily sandwich. Hello everybody, I'm Alexis Sale and welcome to my imaginary sandwich bar! Pretend counter, behind me is the illusory coffee machine, and in front of me the non-existent customers. Here's one of them now. Hello, mate. Haven't seen you for a while.
No! I've been living in the States! But I'm returning to Britain part-time, partly because I've really missed your falafel wrap with its famous hot sauce! Oh, can you tell me what the special ingredient is in your famous hot sauce? Or is it a secret?
No, I can tell you, it's uranium. I'll do one for you now. You know, mate, I've been following your career, and I must say you've done really well, especially considering you're a complete and utter tool.
I know, right? I'm so shit! And yet here I am with this incredibly powerful job!
Well, how do you explain it?
I can't explain it! I'm a posh moron with a consistent record of stupidity, arrogance and failure! Yeah, I've risen to this unbelievably important position!
Well, here's your spicy falafel wrap with special hot sauce.
Thanks, Alexi! See you around!
Yeah, cheers, mate. That was Nick Clegg. Former leader of the Liberal Democrats, ex-coalition deputy prime minister, and now promoted by Mark Zuckerberg to be the president for global affairs at Meta Platforms, which controls Facebook, being paid up to £15 million a year. I mean, how does an idiot like him get a job like that? Well, it is merely a particularly vivid example of the revolving door between politics and big business. You know, they say in conservative voting areas, oh, you could put a Tory rosette on a turnip and it'd get elected round here. And once it left Parliament, that turnip would go on to have a highly lucrative career on the board of PricewaterhouseCoopers, BAE Systems or some other rapacious corporation, and it'd still do a better job than Sajid Javid when he was at JP Morgan. It works for Labour politicians too, and Labour members of Parliament who oppose Jeremy Corbyn have been particularly richly rewarded for their treachery. Right-wing MP Chris Leslie, after he lost his seat, was appointed chief executive of the Trade Association of the UK Debt Collection Industry. That's somebody from the Labour Party becoming the chief executive for the people who smash down your door and take your stuff away because you got behind on your gas bill. Corbyn's disloyal deputy, Tom Watson, was in 2020 made a senior advisor on problem gambling to Flutter Entertainment, the people behind Paddy Power and Betfair. Honestly, anybody who has anything to do with the gambling industry, which ruins so many lives, any advisor, any actor, any ex-sportsman who appears in an ad for online gambling should be ashamed of themselves, Peter Crouch. Until recently, the feeble warning on gambling ads was, when the fun starts, stop. I mean, that shows a real understanding of addiction, doesn't it? When the crack gets a bit whack, stop and have a snack. Now the slogan is, take time to think. Yeah, think about some lonely gambling addict on his phone betting away the money he's been collecting around the pubs for his daughter's dialysis because a computer-generated fox told him it would be a good idea. I think it's well known by now that if Jeremy Corbyn had come to power, I would have been made a minister. His Labour government. But most people assume my post would have been something to do with the arts, while in fact I would have been Minister for Defence. You see, I am one of the few lefties who's actually well informed, indeed obsessed about military matters. Like, I like to go at weekends to watch those military reenactments, you know, where amateurs dress up like roundheads and cavaliers and refight Civil War battles, or put on Confederate and Unionist uniforms to restage the Battle of Gettysburg. Mind you, the military reenactment business has really changed over the last few years. As well as allies versus Nazis, that kind of stuff, you can now get different belligerents, such as Chelsea fans versus Hezbollah. Or Viking Warriors versus Chase Manhattan Bank. Or the cast of Hamilton fighting the 6th Roman Legion. In addition, unlike most of the left who live in a self-confirming bubble, only mixing with other lefties who think exactly like them, I have good contacts within the military establishment. One of my best friends is a 4-star general, which means he's got largely favourable reviews on TripAdvisor. Some reviews say, I find General Perkins really killy. He's super keen on killing and destruction and imperialism, which I like. Conservative MP for Bournemouth East, Tobias Elwood. Other reviews are less positive. For my taste, General Perkins is too killy. I don't want to see anybody killed or anything blown up or any towns destroyed. So only 1 star, I'm afraid. Liam Dutton, Channel 4 weather. Large infrastructure projects in this country are often very badly managed. Take London's Crossrail, now called the Elizabeth Line, which opened 4 years late and is at least £4 billion over budget. Now, some of this was down to giving each of the trains the face of a different member of the royal family. Like in Thomas the Tank Engine. Don't get on the Prince Andrew if you can avoid it. The Conservatives say that they are going to spend 3% of GDP on the arms industry. But I guarantee, if they do, that money will be wasted. My appointments as Defence Minister would have led to huge improvements because equipment for our armed forces is one area where there's even more waste and incompetence than usual. This is because establishment politicians accept all kinds of shoddy garbage for our Army, Navy and Air Force as they hope one day they'll get a cushy job with the same people who make this crap. The Navy's got 39 admirals but hardly any ships. So each ship has to have 3 admirals on board. One of these ships, the Type 45 destroyer, which costs £1 billion a pop, its systems fail completely if the weather gets too hot. While our 2 pointless aircraft carriers, costing £7 billion each, can only launch 1 model of plane, the F-35B, an aircraft that has great difficulty taking off, flying anywhere much, or landing. The Army has an identical procurement scandal with their new armoured personnel carrier, where everybody inside it feels sick, suffocated and panicky as soon as it starts. Just like a Mumford & Sons concert. The reason I like Militaria is simple psychology. Although my parents, Molly and Joe, were communist, dedicated to the violent overthrow of the ruling class, they also subscribed to a theory prevalent in liberal circles that giving children warlike toys, such as model soldiers or cap guns, could awaken in them aggressive, antisocial and overtly male tendencies, which were unsuited to the modern world. So my parents refused to purchase for me any kind of toy gun. At first, this wasn't too much of a problem. All the boys in the street just ran around pointing their fingers at each other, going, ack, 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 or kaplow. But soon their parents began buying them plastic or metal toy guns, which usually fired a paper roll of percussion caps. And this left me pretty badly outgunned with just my fingers. Yet no matter how much I pleaded with her, Molly refused to buy me a toy gun. In the end, out of desperation, tired of spending every evening lying dead on the pavement, I started making my own imitation weapons out of bread. What I would do was I would chew an L shape into a slice of Hovis, then smuggle it out of the house so I could run around the streets shooting other kids with my home meal pistol. I brought such conviction to my play acting that the other kids accepted the fact that my bread gun possessed a degree of firepower, and as long as it didn't rain, I was fine. Maybe in the end it's better that I didn't become Defence Minister, because my core audience has left wing, and they're a pack of judgmental bastards. Always looking to say, oh, I always knew he was a sellout. I saw him one day and he had a hat on, and then I saw him on another day and he had a different hat on. And having two hats, well, that's just as bad as supporting the 1915 Turkish genocide of the Armenians. So I have always been terrified of somehow accidentally getting an MBE or a knighthood, which would be a sign that I was sucking up to the establishment. Now, it's well known that you are never asked outright if you'd accept a Royal Honour, an MBE or a CBE, since nobody can ever be known to turn down the monarch. Rather, there are hints and subtle inquiries. So when the man in the bagel bar asks me, do you want mustard and a pickle on that? I know what he's really saying is, would you be up for betraying your principles and accepting an honour? So I shout, no, I don't want no gong! Then I run out of the shop. The pro-war voices seem to be very strong in our society right now, epitomised by belligerent fanatics such as Tobias Elwood. But where does the public's apparent appetite for violent conflict come from? In a recent documentary, Theatres of War, investigative journalist Tom Secker and academic Matthew Alford reveal the astonishing fact that the Pentagon has interfered behind the scenes in thousands and thousands of films and TV shows over recent decades. For example, the makers of the summer hit Top Gun: Maverick allowed the US Defense Department to oversee the script, weave in key talking points, and censor scenes they didn't like. The US military also demanded and got a veto over actors appearing in the film and an official screening before Maverick could be approved for release. The reach of the US military goes much further, though. In a recent scene in ITV1's Emmerdale, character of Mandy Dingle, played by Lisa Riley, while having a quiet drink in the Woolpack, suddenly launched into a diatribe about how the left-wing Venezuelan government of Nicolas Maduro needed overthrowing with a violent coup. But who benefits from all this conflict? Well, the Zen master said, if you put 100 fire ants and 100 black ants in a jar, they will peacefully live side by side. But if the jar is shaken, then they will attack each other, blaming the other for the disturbance. But the real criminal is the one who shook the jar. So who's shaking our jar? I believe it is the giant corporations, the Meta platforms, the BAE systems, the Chase Manhattan banks, and the politicians they've bought and paid for who are doing it. It is not the human race who are destroying the planet, but the multinationals who wish to place us at each other's throats for their own profit. The Zen master also said, if you're taking part in an Ironman triathlon and your opponent is a shark, then the shark is going to do better in the swimming. And you're going to do better in the running. So then it's all down to the bike. I'm sort of split because there's a part of me that wants to change the world for the better, but there's another part of me that still wishes to be a huge show business star. And one of the things you have to do if you're a big star is to make outrageous demands, like Mariah Carey used to insist that people didn't look at her. And if you're in a restaurant, you have to order off menu. That is, ask for something they don't have or ask for something they do have, but have it cooked in a weird way. So what I do is, if I'm in a Spanish restaurant, I order the gazpacho, then I ask them to have it heated up. But if you want to change the world, then each of us needs to examine our own behaviour. And I see now that I can't carry on in that way. I have made mistakes, made choices, done things that are wrong, and I want to issue a totally insincere and hollow apology for those mistakes and assure everyone I have already made changes to my behaviour that will make no difference at all. First of all, I'd like to apologise because I have, in my career, been tremendously judgmental and savagely unpleasant about certain people, at least 11% of whom didn't deserve it. But perhaps we should all try and avoid being judgmental. I used to be friendly with this old-school comedy writer called Frank Muir, part of the duo of Frank Muir and Dennis Norton. Now, Frank affected this Terry Thomas caddish look, a bristly moustache, big colourful bow ties, and he drove everywhere in a Lagonda sports car. But nevertheless, he was a good guy, tolerant and progressive for his age and for the times. One day in the 1960s, he was out driving his Lagonda around Chertsey in Surrey, where he lived, and he was approaching a corner, and coming the other way at speed was a young woman at the wheel of a beat-up old Morris Minor. And she missed Frank's car by inches, and as she passed him, she wound down the window of her car, and she yelled at him, "Pig!" This made Frank feel really sad. He thought to himself, a young woman sees somebody who looks like me, a middle-aged man who lives in this area, who drives this type of car, and immediately she makes all these assumptions that I'm a reactionary, sexist, right-wing sort of person. Then he rounded the bend and hit a pig. I would also like to apologise for my promotion over the years of the all-you-can-eat buffet. Once a staple of budget dining, they now seem to be on their way out. My feeling that this is partly due to the fact that all-you-can-eat buffets are incredibly wasteful, but also because diners took too many liberties. They lacked discipline, pushed the boundaries too far. To participate successfully in an all-you-can-eat buffet, it always seemed to me you needed to adopt what you might call a mode of moral behaviour, an almost warrior code, which I thought of as the code of Buffido. If you followed the code of Buffido, you understood that you weren't just somebody having a meal, but were a part of something bigger, a model for a different way of life, perhaps. If you followed the code of Buffido, you didn't stand dithering in front of the barbecue ribs, but made your choice rapidly and moved smartly along. If you were buying a takeaway salad at a self-service place, you always made sure you could get the lid of the container on without hummus squirting out of the sides. And you didn't have chicken wings in your handbag to eat later or as a treat for your cat. Also, for a long time, I appeared at Bristol's Colston Hall without realising that it was named after a notorious slave trader. 3 decades ago, I was doing stand-up there, and I told a gag, and a member of the audience shouted out, "You said that the last time you were here!" Now, when you're a comedian, you have these prepared put-downs, witty responses to hecklers. So I used one of mine. I said back to him, "Well, you're a daft bastard to pay to hear it again then, aren't you?" In response, he shouted, "You said that last time as well!" The internet has led to an explosion of people sharing their views. These days, I usually get my news online like everybody else, but occasionally I'll buy an actual hard copy of a newspaper. But when I read an article, I immediately look beneath it for the opinion of thousands and thousands of ill-informed idiots. People who voted for Brexit are leaving the EU as though nothing to stop all these immigrants who I've never seen and don't live round here. People who voted against Brexit. I hope those who voted for Brexit know what they've done to our chances of selling the house in the Dordogne. Back in the day, the only people who got to express their ill-informed, screechy opinions widely were newspaper columnists. And newspaper columnists are literally the worst people in the world. Constantly flip-flopping, saying anything to please whoever's paying them, taking positions, then abandoning them. And we saw the result of that when we actually had a government led by newspaper columnists in Michael Gove and Boris Johnson. I would like to apologise, because for years I was a newspaper columnist. I have had several columns in various newspapers, and in 1995, Charles Leadbitter, the features editor of The Independent, offered me a weekly column in the same week that he offered a little-known journalist called Helen Fielding the chance to write a column about urban life in London designed to appeal to young professional women. So the Alexei Sale column and Bridget Jones's Diary were both born in February 1995. I think we know who did best out of that situation. Several of my columns would have been made into major movies if the US Defense Department hadn't intervened. Also, I have to confess that I've gone on cruises. Because cruise ships are an environmental disaster. But as me and Linda have got older, we can't stop ourselves going on cruises. Particularly river cruises of the sort that are advertised during Midsummer Murders. In 2019, we were due to go on a trip up the Danube, but the water was too low, so on certain stretches, we would have had to carry the boat. Like in the movie Fitzcarraldo. So we switched to the Rhine. When we got back, people asked me what it was like, our cruise. And I said it was like Conrad's Heart of Darkness, but with extra Australian racists. The trick was to stop anybody sitting next to you at dinner. So we'd try and get there late, and when we were seated, I'd act sort of mad. I've got a tortoise called Gerald. But one night I stopped too early and we heard the dread words, "Are these seats free?" They were an old Aussie couple. First thing he asked me was, "What do you think of Meghan Markle?" I replied, "Well, the idea that she's a feminist is ludicrous, since she's involved in a system of oppression that's been going on for 1,000 years, grinding the faces of the poor. But I think the tabloid paper's reaction to her is racism, pure and simple." He said, "Yeah, we don't like her either." Nevertheless, though I may risk offending some of my left-wing audience, I think if I want to get my message across, it means adapting to this new world where art has been subsumed totally to making money and promoting products. So I've become a brand ambassador for Frosty Jack's apple cider. It's great. I get to travel around the country talking to people in bars, clubs, and ditches. I looked up Frosty Jack's on Amazon and it said people who bought Frosty Jack's apple cider also bought more Frosty Jack's apple cider. You may or may not have been listening to Alexei Sale's imaginary sandwich bar. Thank you. Good night. Alexei Sale's imaginary sandwich bar was written and performed by Alexei Sale. The producer was Joe Nunnery. It was a BBC Studios production.
Twenty-five years of the 21st century. What will future historians make of this epoch?
Institutions no longer have a sort of monopoly on the provision and consumption of information.
Which events, people and movements really are significant?
Iraq, I think, is the one to focus on as this war that set off a series of chain reactions which we're still living with.
And how will we be judged by generations to come?
We've shown that we can pull together when we need to.
25 years of the 21st century with me, Matthew Side, from BBC Radio.